I speak to you in the name of a living and loving God, Redeemer, Creator, Indwelling Spirit. Amen. When I read the passages that we're dealing with today, at the beginning of this week, my mind went all over the place. So, if that's what it sounds like today, that's exactly what it'll be. I thought I would begin this service. I didn't begin the earlier service, but I thought, I'm going to begin with the end. Bottom line, we are created to love and serve others, not to love and serve ourselves. And it's only by the grace of God, and as a result of God's intervention for us in the man Jesus, that we're able to do that. Fancy word, redeemed to be the people we were always created to be. So that's where I hope to end up. And if I end up there, great. If I don't, you can tell me about it after at the back. Just to unpackage the passages and see how what I've just said plays out. The book of Job. I really, really don't like preaching about the book of Job. That's my disclaimer. It's very uncomfortable. It has been hugely misrepresented and misunderstood. Books have been written about it, about why human suffering happens. Well, that's part of the book of Job. All sorts of books have been written about why did God visit suffering on Job. That's not the point at all. This book was actually put together over a long period of time. Some of the earliest passages given about the time of the reign of King David, and the last few bits were put together, and it found its final form sometime during or after the exile. And the people of Israel had gone on quite a roller coaster from being in control of their own destiny to losing everything. And some of their writers who contributed to this posed the question, and this is the question really that I think this book poses. Do we only worship God, and are we only faithful when things are okay? It's a question I have to ask on a daily basis. When my garden doesn't grow and I look up to God and say, God, I work for you. Why are the beets not germinating this spring? And the voice comes back, well, who gave you the beet seed in the first place? Get on with it. It is a conflicting kind of passage. So how do I come to the end of the story that I began with by looking at the book of Job? Today's passage could be read in several ways. It could be either read as a rebuke from God to Job, you know, gird up your loins, look at all the stuff I've done to you, or perhaps more accurately, and this is how I encourage we read it, as the kind of intimate relationship and the closeness and the involvement that the ancient people thought they had with God. They always thought of God as someone they could talk to and unburden themselves even in the worst circumstances. Now, God is actually responding to the comforters. If you read the whole book, you know, there are poetic passages. There's a part that sounds like a courthouse. There are some dialogues. There are a bunch of well-meaning friends that say to Job, this stuff has happened to you because you must have done something wrong. And it's God responding to that kind of thinking. This isn't happening to Job because he did something wrong. It's happening because horrible things happen in life. And even when they do happen, God explaining to Job all the giftedness that he has received at the divine favor, is saying, I've always been there for you. I've given you all these wonderful things. Let's sit down as confidants. Where were you at the beginning of creation? If we were to read on, and thankfully the person that put the lection together didn't give us the rest of the chapter, We would read about why goats have kids and how calves and cows are related and why the crops germinate, but we didn't have to do that, so I won't dwell on it. The whole point is that God is saying to Job, you can't possibly understand the great mystery of my love. You cannot possibly carry the burden of creation. And you don't have to. All I ask you to do is recognize that gift and in your own fashion, share it. Share the gift with others. Horrible things have happened to you, but how powerful is it when you and I, and I'm sure we all have personal examples of this, see someone in dire circumstances, and yet somehow or other they're full of grace. That's very powerful. And in a way, that's implied in this book. Despite all the dire circumstances, Job, you are still able to be faithful. You are still able to reflect the glory of creation. Now, next week, the preacher gets the privilege of tying it all together and everything's given back to Job. I won't say anything about that. You have to be here for next week to hear it. So in the book of Job, we're really hearing about why we worship God. The people of Israel who had lost everything in the exile are saying, yeah, in spite of all of that, we are still able, we are still willing, and we are still capable of being God's people and reflecting that to those whose lives we touch, and perhaps most powerfully, to those who persecute us. I know Mahatma Gandhi talked about heaping ashes on your persecutor's head. He may have had other thoughts when Jesus talks about it. He's saying, you sanctify them. You bring them closer to God when they see that despite their persecutions, you are still willing, able, and capable of God's love and grace. I think that's all in the book of Job. I love the gospel. I get a bit of a chuckle when the other disciples get annoyed with James and John for asking to be at the front of the line. You know, what's in it for us? There's sort of that in the book of Job too. What's in it for me? You know, a Cadillac in the garage, mortgage is paid, and all the other stuff. Is that in it for me if I worship you? Well, maybe it isn't. In the case of the gospel, James and John are completely misunderstanding the kind of kingdom that Jesus is talking about. The whole gospel of Mark is about that. You know, they're thinking of a Davidic king that's going to bring in a new golden age, and they're going to be in positions of power and privilege. They will be entitled to all sorts of honors. People will bow and scrape to them in the street because they are members of that household. Kind of sounds like the new Christian nationalism south of the border, but our hands aren't clean either. And Jesus sets the record straight. He says, no, you know, it's not what it's about. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink from? Now, I wonder what went through their minds. I kind of thought before I started preaching, maybe they were thinking, well, yeah, we can do that. Sure, we can do that. Yeah, we'll sit at the table. We'll get the best wine. We'll get the Chablis or the Beaujolais or whatever it is. And Jesus says, no, I'm talking about suffering here. I'm talking about stepping aside for the other and by God's grace, reflecting God's love in the way that you're willing to live for the other. Something about what I said when I started. Now, the other disciples, like I say, I got a chuckle about what they had to say. I don't think they were angry with James and John because they knew that James and John had asked the wrong question. I think they were angry because they figured they'd been bumped further down the line for the goodies in the kingdom. That's what I think. So Jesus has to turn to them and set the record straight with them too. And he says it quite plainly. We're not here about power. We're not like the kingdoms of the earth. We're not here about privilege. We are not what I would call theological narcissists. There's a mouthful. In it for myself. What do I get if I worship you and I'm faithful to you? What you get, you've already received. You've already received all the gifts. You've received life itself. Or in my case, the beet seeds that took a time to germinate in the spring. Anybody want beets? I got too many now. See next week in the book of Job. You are here to serve and love by God's grace, and God's grace certainly makes it happen. And despite whatever happens to you and I in this life, insofar as we're in that relationship, we will get through it together, and we will encourage each other together, and we will model together the way Jesus himself went through a kind of suffering that put an end to death and opened the true way to home, which we were always designed for, and that is in the presence of and in service to God. The book of Hebrews, interesting book. It's not really a letter. I once heard a preacher get up and say, we're going to do a reading from Paul's letter to the Hebrews. Well, Paul didn't write it in the first place. We don't know who wrote the book of Hebrews. What we do know is that there were a number of new Jewish Christian converts in Jerusalem sometime before the fall of Jerusalem in 70 AD. There'll be a test after, by the way, at coffee. I'll be checking times. And what the writer is saying is, don't fall back on the ways that never worked. What's the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over again, hoping for different results. Don't go back to the old rituals. Don't go back and struggle and think you yourself can make a relationship with God and be loved by God. You don't need to do that. God already has extended the relationship. God already loves you. Loves you to the extent that God, the divine wisdom and presence, has come to you in the person of Jesus to show you how it's done and make it possible for you to be human. Now, there's a lovely little word in here, another test coming up for coffee, Melchizedek. Melchizedek was a legendary king who was met, or rather meets, Abram and Sarai as they're trying to find their way to the Holy Land. As I mentioned this morning, they probably didn't have a road map. They certainly didn't have Waze, you know, that lovely app in Google that'll tell you exactly where all the speed bumps are. They didn't have that. And they were trying to find their way to the Holy Land. And they're met by a fellow called Melchizedek. Rough translation, the king is my righteousness. It's a Hebrew word. Or the king of righteousness. And this king of righteousness, and this is kind of interesting, first offers them bread and wine. You see the connection that's being made for the early Christians. They'd already been familiar with some of the newly developing Eucharistic rituals. And after offering them bread and wine, blesses them for the journey. The king of righteousness gives them everything they need for the journey into righteousness and into the promise. And now the author to the Hebrews is saying to people that are thinking, maybe this Christian stuff's not so good after all, you know, there's a persecution coming. He's saying, I want you to think back into your collective consciousness and awareness and liken this man, Jesus, to God's righteousness and God's blessing, and maybe the kind of rituals we've already engaged ourselves in. Melchizedek. Now, back to the end. God has given us everything we possibly could ask or imagine for the journey into the kingdom. The kingdom where people respect each other. The kingdom where people encourage each other. The kingdom where people love others above the love of themselves. The kingdom where there is grace in abundance. The kingdom where peace is not just a concept, but a real possibility. The kingdom where we respect every manner, shape, and form of humanity and every manner, shape, and form of creation. The kingdom in which we assume a stewardship by God and through God and made possible by God's grace. Job, difficult book. James and John, getting the record straight. The book of Hebrews, we have Melchizedek as the new high priest, king of righteousness, king of glory, the king that blesses us, and the king that feeds us. Enjoy the journey. Amen.